Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. South African playwright Atul Fugard has written some great and important plays in his long career. His work has, in a sense, been a chronicle of the turbulent relations between races in that country as it has evolved through the second half of the 20th century into the 21st. Fugard's latest work will get its Midwest premiere in Milwaukee this week. The Train Driver is inspired by a true story of a railroad man searching for the identities of a mother and child accidentally killed by his train. Milwaukee Chamber Theater's production of The Train Driver opens this evening. The two-man cast stars David Daniel and Michael Torrey, who joined Lake Effect's Bonnie North, and talked about what makes Fugard's work so important to them.
For me, the power of Fugard is in his relationships, the relationships between the characters on stage and his relationship that every character has to whatever is going on in their life. And so this particular piece, I suppose you could say – it would be very easy to say that his plays have a lot to do with race, and I know that to be true. But I grew up in Virginia in the South, and the race question is still very much alive and still being pursued and asked and trying to be answered. But for me, the biggest part of this play, the strongest, what really drew me to it was the idea of class. It's always separation. It doesn't matter if it's separation because of religion or skin color or how much money you make, but there'll always be some separation. And that separation, out of that separation comes ignorance. Oh, I know how it is for them. If only they would just, you know, just why don't you just get a job? There's always that kind of opinion that grows up and is nourished in ignorance where I know about my life, so I must know about yours. And I think this play is a really great example of stepping into another person's world and having your eyes open that all those assumptions that you had made about those people and whatever those people are, all those assumptions just come crashing around you when you realize that they're human beings in extraordinary circumstances and that if you're lucky, you would do half as well as they are doing in their circumstances. So personally, for me, the play deals a lot with class and the assumptions that we all have about that group of people or that group of people. And I have found it motivating. It's encouraging to me, even though the play may not end that well for the characters in it. It encourages me to step outside of where I am, where I live, and look into the lives of other people that I assume I know all about.
Until you find out that you don't. Yes. And so we kind of set this – let's set this up a little bit. You play Rolf, David, and you are an Afrikaans.
Yes.
And you are coming to, Michael, your place, and Simon is
– Well, Simon is the caretaker, if you will, of the graveyard where they bury the nameless people. So those black South Africans that have died and no one knows their name, nobody has claimed their body, they go to this graveyard to just be buried anonymously. And I'm the caretaker of that graveyard. And in my own way, even though I don't know who they are, I mark the graves so that I know, well, I buried someone here and, you know, I need to make another spot for the next person type of thing. And when Rolf, or as Simon fondly calls him in the play, Rufy, when he comes into his world, part of his frustration is trying to locate the particular grave in which he's looking for.
Now, do you feel that Simon is also learning something about Rolf's life that he didn't know about? Because certainly Rolf is learning about Simon and Simon's world.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, yes. You know, Simon, they come at each other from such different places. And, you know, one of the directions that Michael Wright, our director, has given us is when they first meet, they are almost like two dogs trying to figure each other out. And then out of that comes an understanding, if you will, of each other, especially for Rolf. And then for Simon, too, that this guy is not so bad. He's interesting. I have learned something from him. And out of that, there is this unique relationship, I will call it. We can't call it necessarily a friendship. We can't call it, you know, a buddy play, if you will, but
right,
there is
not
an
really
understanding.
Comrades,
yeah, but it's an understanding. at which point they reach. So,
yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, it's like all art. It's so subjective and it depends on where you are at that time when you meet the piece. But for me, I find it I find it to be a very uplifting ending. And I'm sure most of the people who are going to watch the show are going to go, no, I don't.
That man
maybe
is,
that was a different play you were
he's
reading.
Mad.
Yeah. But
he's
I find, and I go back to the idea of class or race, that he's a writer. Foucault is a brilliant writer, and he knows that these kind of changes that a human being would go through, a life change, they don't come about on a Tuesday. They don't come about when you're having coffee and then you turn to the table beside you and there's someone who's different and you strike up a conversation. It takes extraordinary circumstances to break down the walls that you have built up for so many years and your understanding of what life is, what you think life is. And so he's created these incredible circumstances for this man, Rolf Asahi. And he just provides him with that opportunity to make the change. And I don't know. I was talking to someone about this earlier. I don't know if I would have the strength to make the change that Rolf does, because he absolutely changes his idea of what the world is like. That's extraordinary. And so I think the play ends I think it ends well, because there's a human being who said, I am absolutely sure that this is what life is about. And by the end of the play, by the end of his journey, he's been confronted with other human beings and he changes his worldview on that. And I think that's extraordinary.
I think most of us don't change that easily.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And we don't want to. We like our ideas, even if we don't know we have them.
Right.
We're comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to add to that, it's just so amazing that he takes these circumstances, because this is based on a true story. And he has taken the story and I believe it took him some years to finally put it down on paper. He knew this incident happened. It took him years to process it, put it down on paper, and come up with this viewpoint for the play. And it is just interesting that all of the, you know, art imitates life. So he has taken actual events in life and formed this beautiful play to speak to us, you know, the masses, so that hopefully we can take that journey with Rolf and hopefully in our own way find resolution, find understanding.
Or at least have our eyes open.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And that's all it takes. I mean, sometimes that's all that art can provide you, whether it's a dance or a piece of music or a piece of art on the wall. It just something opens up and it gives you the opportunity. You're the one who has to step through. You're going to have to find the courage to step through and be something different. But that's all that we can ask of art, is that it just gives us the opportunity to step into something greater than what we already are.
What are some of the challenges for the two of you as actors, talking in craft terms now? I mean, David, you have most of the lines. I mean, there's times when it felt like it was almost a monologue. And Michael, you have to – you're reacting to a lot of that.
Yes, constantly.
Yeah.
You know, David does have long passages within the play and – you could think, oh, well, he's got time off. But actually, I don't, because I have to journey with him. I have to listen to him go through this process. And in so doing, I'm going through the process with him. So therefore, the understanding comes, you know, from two totally different ways, but that understanding comes together. And yeah, it is it's an interesting journey, because there is no time off really for either one of us. Yeah,
I think it's easier to imagine that when you have a speech, a monologue, a soliloquy, that there must be some craft. You must craft it in some way, and have your highs and lows, and how this thought leads to the other. And I think it's less easier to imagine the listening of that, the listening to that, and that takes just as much craft as anything else, because. Michael has to know he has to know my rambling thoughts that Fugard has given him. He's got to know him just as well as I do, because he's got to respond in just the right way to help prompt me to say the next thing. I have to look into his eyes and see that he understands. I have to look into his eyes and see that he doesn't understand and please do this one time. And so he crafts his listening just as much as I craft my speaking. And it's a hard job.
Yeah. Yeah. And at some point, you have to realize as the character that you're on this journey too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because as you go through it, you know, as David was just saying, his words prompt my reactions. And in so doing, it does prompt the words that I do speak and everything, because they are questions to him to hopefully have my character understand what he is saying and what he's going through.
And also prompts your actions, too.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it once or twice. At the end of the play, we're interested where Simon ends up and what he has learned. And it's curious to ask that at the end of the play, and I can't wait for a talk back, but to find out if the audience thinks that Simon stepped forward, stepped up, stepped out of where he was before into something new, or if he has stepped back. So it's just be a curious question.
Yes. And Fugard leaves it kind of open.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does leave it where an audience can interpret, mm-hmm. you know, what happens. And certainly the actors can. Mm-hmm. You can make decisions. And I wonder if that might not change each time you do it. Over the course of the run, you'll have things pretty much set, of course, but you'll have things that move and evolve and change because it has to.
And that's one of the worst parts about acting.
Yeah.
No, I'm not,
really?
I'm not kidding, Michael. I were talking about laughing about it yesterday. We both know, having done this for many years, that the last last performance, we're going to look at something and go, oh, why? Oh, after all this time, that's
now
how
I figured it
now
out.
Now I know how to say it. And it's maddening. Yeah. It's maddening. It's maddening. You feel like if you could have started there, then you're just getting at something rather than, oh, this is where we ended up. And somehow it just feels so frustrating at times.
But, you know, that's such a perfect description of what this play is asking us to do, too.
Yes.
You know, that you never get it.
Right.
All you can do is keep trying.
That's right.
And I'm like, David, I can't wait until that first talk back, because I know that there are going to be two or three different viewpoints where a person goes, well, I saw this. And the other person goes, how did you in the world did you see that? I saw this. And it's just going to be interesting to hear what they take away from that.
Does that feed into your future performances once you've kind of got things set and you have a talk back and you take in what audience members are saying? Does that inform you going forward?
We're certainly not going to change anything.
Like rethink.
Yeah,
the
we're not going to rethink
that.
We're not going to rethink that. But I won't say no to that.
I just wondered, because talkbacks are such an important part of most theaters' experiences now. You know, they want to hear what audience – and I wonder how that affects actors, you know, once you've got a performance kind of gelled.
Well, for me, that's the whole point of doing the play. My mother and father were actors, and they grew up in the 60s at doing plays in church basements and coffee houses. And afterwards, the most important part of the play happened, which was the discussion. And people were talking about the plays, not about the actors. Oh, you were so good in your part and I love the costumes. But they were talking about, I disagree. I don't think the government has a responsibility. So it was that kind of arguing. And for me, that feeds that's exactly what theater is for, which I believe is why I love Fugard so much, because his plays are about those conversations that we have. And so the talkbacks for me are exactly why I do the play, so that we can have conversations that we would not have had otherwise. So he presents this drama for us, and as it unfolds, we become emotionally tied, not logically, not rationally. No, we're emotionally tied to it. And afterwards, we're all churned up and we have to speak about that and get it out, and we learn from each other. And I don't know that I'm going to change anything, but I do know that that strengthens my resolve in what it is that I do as a professional.
Ditto. I will add that.
Yes. Yes. Well, I am very much looking forward to hearing, you know, what people think about this, because it is, again, such a powerful play. Very much looking forward to seeing the both of you in it. And I want to thank you for coming in and talking a little bit about it today.
Oh, thank you very much for having
us. It's
been
our pleasure. Thank you.
David Daniel and Michael Torrey star in Milwaukee Chamber Theater's production of Atul Fugard's The Train Driver, which opens this evening at the Broadway Theater Center's Studio Theater. That's in the Third Ward. It runs through March 15th. They spoke with Bonnie North. A mainstay of the Milwaukee art world is in its last few weeks of existence. We hear about the end of an era on West Burleigh Street when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio.